Hello and welcome to Vanguard Audiobooks. In this session today, we're going to do the initial introduction and chapter of a book about Mary Fagan, who was raped, tortured, murdered by the Jew Leo Frank just about 100 years ago. And back in 1987, her relative, also named Mary Fagan, published a book about it called The Murder of Little Mary Fagan, New Horizon Press, Far Hills, New Jersey. And let's get into it. It's a couple hundred pages, about 12 chapters. And as I say, we'll do the introduction and the acknowledgments and the starting material today, and then chapter one, which goes only about 9 pages. It'll be pretty quick. And then we'll follow up later with chapter two, which will be considerably longer. But these pages are fairly quick. They're not large pages as with other people. Anyway, Mary Fagan's significant in that this Jew was running a pencil factory down in Atlanta or around there, and he was leching on all the women who worked for him. He was a Jew from the East, from Cornell, sent down there to manage it. And he basically told Mary Fagan to come in on Saturday and get her paycheck. He wouldn't give it to her friend on Friday. She came in, he molested her and strangled her, and then he tried to blame it on not one but two different blacks. And he didn't get away with it. He was caught. He was put on trial. He was found guilty. It was confirmed all the way through the system a couple of times. And the Jews just went wild. And this is back in 1913 or so. So it was before really radio had really taken off, before TV, but there were still newspapers. The Jews who had come to the U.S. in large numbers after 1880 didn't quite control everything the way they do today, but nevertheless they had a strong and growing media power in the newspapers. Back then newspapers weren't so much in chains as they are today. There were many more than there are today at the turn of the century. They hadn't gotten to where we are, where it's consolidated into, it's rare that there's a newspaper that's an independent, it's i.e. not part of a chain. There's rare the town that has more than one newspaper, but back then there were many more newspapers, so there were many more non-Jew owners, and there were people who kept an independent line. Jews hadn't fully consolidated their hold over the national media and national politics. And there were people who disagreed with them, who had power and who were not afraid to disagree with them. But anyway, this was the first sort of stirring, this Leo Frank murdering this Mary Fagan, and the Jews attempt to defend him by impugning the character of any white or black within about 50 miles of this pencil factory where the Jew did this dirty deed. Their attempt to hire sell out goys to go down there and plead their case or announce that they were investigating really is it resulted actually in the creation of the ADL by the B'nai B'rith, which pre-existed. And that's a pretty remarkable thing. And we're coming up on the 100th anniversary, and the Jews are still, to this day, they were trying and trying and trying to pay people to get Frank off even after he'd been convicted and was basically on death row. They couldn't succeed, or rather they were about to succeed, but a justice group of Georgians assembled and took Frank out of jail and executed him. And this is why today Jews refer to the horror of lynching and the horror of mob activity, because it effectively works as a check against their ability to buy justice, because they don't care that Leo Frank is a pedophile and a murderer. They only care that he's a Jew. And by what they call their religion, anything that a Jew does to a goy is justified. Now, some of you who might be newcomers will think I'm making that up. I'm not making that up. Jews are allowed to do whatever they want, provided they can get away with it, provided it doesn't bring the heat down on the larger Jew community. So long as those conditions are met, they are free to do whatever they can to cheat, lie, steal, rape, murder, goyim, because goyim are just insects compared to Jews. They are just livestock compared to Jews. They are there to be used and discarded by Jews. And so that even in this ultimate reduction to absurdity case, where you have a Jew who's obviously and clearly not only guilty of torture and murder, but guilty of trying to blame it on someone else. Nevertheless, you have not just an organization backing this Jew, but you have an organization created to defend this Jew and not really defend him. They're trying to get him off after he's been convicted by defaming anybody they can, by bribing anybody they can, by committing any kind of possible injustice they can to see that this Jew is a... Well, you know what? The good people of Georgia saw to it that justice was done. And now what we're reading today is a book written by, 70, 80 years later, by one of Little Mary Fagan's relatives. And this is The Murder of Little Mary Fagan by Mary Fagan. New Horizon Press, Far Hills, New Jersey. Suspect that may have been, press may have been created to publish this book. Anyway, copyright 1987 by Mary Fagan / Keen. Suppose that was her married name. Grateful acknowledgement is made by the author to the following. This won't be too long, but just some notes about where she draws her source. She's acknowledging the Atlanta Historical Society for excerpts from Atlanta and Its Environs, Volume 2, 1954, by Franklin Garrett. To the Atlanta Journal and Constitution, the main paper down there, for articles dealing with Mary Fagan, Leo Frank case, 1913 to 1987. To the Augusta, that would be Georgia, Chronicle Herald, for the statement by Justice Randall Evans Jr., which appeared in the May 15th, 1983 edition. To Henry Bowden, for the use of material on his paper on Leo Frank, which appeared in 1945. To Tom Watson Brown, for use of material from Notes on the Case of Leo Max Frank and Its Aftermath. 1982, from Personal Letters and from Watson's Magazine, August 15th, edition, and I have read that in a session that we did, which you can find this and every session that we do at vnnforum.com, the massive archive and the audio books thread. And we've gone over this Leo Frank case because it's so instructive as to how Jews actually think, how they actually operate, how they form sort of a nucleus and a tribe and a swarm, a hive, whichever metaphor you want to use, and they rush out en masse and sting everybody like killer bees who gets in the way of what they're trying to do. They're not protecting their own. They're protecting guilty people purely because they're Jews. And you never hear about Jews hating other, but what could possibly be more hateful than that? Anyway, a few more acknowledgments. To the Christian Theological, and Tom Watson, I should say, was the governor of Georgia, I believe. And he was the one who refused to be bribed and refused to let injustice triumph due to Jewish publicity and Jewish checks. He saw to it that justice prevailed. And Mary Fagan was vindicated, this poor, young 13, 14-year-old girl who is a virgin and being attacked by this loathsome Jew. And today they will defame Tom Watson. They took down a statue of him. And a rabbi down there, I hear, is trying to resuscitate the reputation of Leo Frank, even at this late date. Jews never give up trying to get post hoc certificate validating whatever their position was. Even if they lose once, they keep coming at it, trying to alter history by rewriting it. The fact was this filthy Jew raped and tortured and killed this girl. And nothing Jews can do will change that fact. But Jews believe that history is just the loudest lie and truth is the loudest voice. Truth is whatever they say it is if they control the airwaves. So Fagan acknowledges the Christian Theological Seminary of Indianapolis, Indiana, successor to the Butler University School of Religion, publisher of the Shane Quarterly, for the excerpt from the letter of Dr. Luther Otterbein Bricker, which appeared in the April 1943 edition, number IV:2, of the Shane Quarterly. to the East Cobb neighbor, Marietta, Georgia. That was where this actually took place, Marietta, near Atlanta, for the use of the article, quote, "Jewish leaders seek exoneration for Frank," unquote, which appeared in the April 6, 1982 edition. Remember, she's publishing this in 1987. To the Georgia State Board of Pardons and Paroles for the letter of Silas Moore, dated January 17, 1983, and for the decisions, dated December 22, 1983, and March 16, 1986. To George H. Keeler, for statements of O.B. Keeler on the Leo M. Frank case, 1913 to 1915. So, see, we're at the centenary of this is why we're focusing on it in recent months. To Stuart Lewengrub, Lewengrub, Southeast Regional Director of the Anti-Defamation League, for his letter to James Fagan of March 21st, 1974. Again, Jews are divided up into districts. The ADL is like the FBI, which they also train. So that they would train the FBI that it's not a hate crime. It's not even really a crime at all when Jews do this. It's simply our religion that we take advantage of all other people. And we work them the way ants work aphids. To the Nashville Tennessean for articles dealing with the Mary Fagan Leo Frank case, 1982 to 1986. Especially the special news section on the Mary Fagan Leo Frank case appearing in the March 7th, 1982 edition. And the article, "Little Mary Fagan is Not Forgotten," which appeared in the September 5th, 1983 edition. Nashville Tennessean, writing about it in the early 80s. To Sandra Roberts of the Nashville Tennessean staff for personal letters dated April 6, 1982, April 14, 1982, and April 22, 1982. To the University of North Carolina Press, and we're about done here, for the use of the excerpt from "I Can Go Home Again" by Arthur Gray Powell, published in 1943. And I think that's the last one. And then we've got Library of Congress cataloging in publication data, Fagan, Mary, the murder of Little Mary Fagan. One, murder, / Georgia, - Atlanta, - case studies. ISBN 0-88282-099-7. Again, the murder of Little Mary Fagan by Mary Fagan. Mary Fagan / Keene. Acknowledgement. Again, this is brief. I gratefully acknowledge the following individuals for giving me the oral history of my family. Mary Richards Fagan, Annabel Fagan Cochran, Lily Fagan Baswell, Baswell, John Fagan Durham, and to J.C. Girthrie, G-I-R-T-H-R-I-E, childhood friend of my grandfather. The author gratefully acknowledges Lisa Sorrells, S-O-R-R-E-L-S, who helped me research, edit, and rewrite my manuscript and gave me emotional support. To Tom Watson Brown, great-grandson of Tom Watson, the fellow I was talking about, and Bill Kinney, K-I-N-N-E-Y, senior editor of the Marietta Daily Journal, I acknowledge their assistance in the preparation of the trial and lynching material. I also gratefully acknowledge these individuals for granting me interviews. Franklin Garrett, historian, Atlanta Historical Society. George Keeler, son of O.B. Keeler. Marietan, who covered the trial for the Atlanta Georgian, newspaper down there. Michael H. Wing, member of the State Board of Pardons and Paroles. Stuart Lewengrub, Southeast Regional Director of the ADL. Betty Cantor, C-A-N-T-O-R, that's a famous Jew name, German Jew name, Associate Director of the Southeast Office of the ADL. Charles Wittenstein, Southern Council of the Anti-Defamation League. So she talked to three different ADL people. She's citing in the acknowledgments. And lastly, to Bernard and my friends for their love and encouragement. Dedication to Daddy and William Joshua Fagan, Jr., 1898 to 1973, and Michael Robert Fagan, 1959 to 1982. Now moving on to the contents, we see introduction in chapter one. Are you by any chance dot dot dot? That's what we're going to cover today. Total of 12 chapters and about 311 pages or so. But as I say, these are smaller pages. Introduction. I placed a single red rose on the grave. My finger traced over the name Mary Fagan. The epitaph was one I knew by heart. In this day of fading ideals and disappearing landmarks, little Mary Fagan's heroism is an heirloom than which there is nothing more precious among the old red hills of Georgia. Sleep, little girl. Sleep in your humble grave, but if the angels are good to you, in the realms beyond the trouble, sunset and the clouded stars, they will let you know that many an aching heart in Georgia beats for you, and many a tear from eyes unused to weep has paid tribute too sacred for words. So that's the epitaph on Mary Fagan's grave. Looking up, I saw an old couple trudge up the grassy hill towards the grave. I stood up and turned to meet them. "Can I help you?" I inquired. The lady wore a light blue dress with a matching striped jacket and white sandals. Her brown eyes were framed by glasses and her hair was gray. I guess she was in her mid to late 80s. Her husband also had brown eyes and gray hair, balding a little on top. Twin-like, they were almost color-coordinated. He wore a light gray wool suit and a pale blue shirt. He must have been around 90 years old, and he walked with a cane. He towered over her. Somehow, from the way they carried themselves, I knew their questions would be different. Not the usual, "Do you know where the grave of Little Mary Fagan is? Are you by any chance related to Little Mary Fagan? How do you feel about the murder of Little Mary Fagan?" They seemed to be lost in remembering, too. The lady looked at me with concern and intensity and finally spoke. It was on April 26, 1913, Confederate Memorial Day, that Little Mary Fagan was murdered in downtown Atlanta. April 26, 1913, as I read this on June 1st, 2015. So, 102 and a month plus ago. It was April 26, 1913, or Confederate Memorial Day, that Little Mary Fagan was murdered in downtown Atlanta. Not many people celebrate Confederate Memorial Day anymore. Not many native born here anymore. She turned her head slightly and her eyes swept over Mary Fagan's gravestone. "We remember different times. Times long ago, times that don't come back except for her story." She paused and added, "We were there. And little Mary Fagan's story remains with us. All the sadness and some of the hate, we felt it. Yes, times were different, all right. A lot of murders happen today. But they don't symbolize something like hers did. We were one of a kind. We were one of her kind, hardworking, and striving to have a decent life. We made it, but she didn't." For the first time, she looked closely at me. "You look a lot like her," she said, her voice faltering. I nodded sadly. "My name is Mary Fagan. Little Mary Fagan was my great aunt." For a moment, the couple stared at me in disbelief, and then they wrapped their arms around me to comfort me. "Yes," the old woman said, "I can see the resemblance now." Breaking the embrace, she patted my shoulder gently. For a while we were silent, and then, as daylight faded, they politely excused themselves. And that's the end of the introduction. Let's move on to chapter one. "Are you, by any chance?" is the title of chapter one. After they left, I stood there, feeling again all the conflicting emotions which I could not resolve or forget. My mind spun back 15 years. I was 13. We were living in Charleston, South Carolina, where my father, the first sergeant of the 17th Air Transport Squadron, was stationed. Mr. Henry, my 8th grade science teacher at R.B. Stahl High School, S-T-A-L-L, registered astonishment when I told him my name was Mary Fagan. "You know," he said, "there was a little girl who was murdered in Atlanta years ago, years and years ago, who had the same name as you. Are you, by any chance, related to her?" I told him I didn't know. The conversation disturbed me. I became curious. Was there really another Mary Fagan? Fagan, I believe, is a pretty typical Irish name. During recess, some of my classmates taunted me. Are you that dead girl's reincarnation? Another called out. Are you the little girl who had been murdered? And ran away. I cried all the way home from school. My father happened to be home. What's wrong? He said when he saw my tear-stained face. I want to know who the little girl named Mary Fagan that was murdered was, I said, trembling. Am I related to her? He put his arm around my shoulders, walked me into the kitchen, and sat me down at the table in the sunny alcove. He poured two glasses of milk, brought them to the table, and sat opposite me. The afternoon sun played up the reddish tints in his light brown hair, worn in a severe military crew cut, and glinted off his military-issue glasses. Yes, you are related to little Mary Fagan, he said solemnly. She was your grandfather's sister. She would have been my aunt. You are her great-niece and name for her, our name for her. Gently, he told me the outline of the story of Mary Fagan, that she had caught the English Avenue streetcar the morning of Saturday, April 26, 1913. All this takes place on a Saturday. Confederate Memorial Day, not just a Saturday, but Confederate Memorial Day, to go to the National Pencil Company, NPC, National Pencil Company, in Marietta there, where she had worked in downtown Atlanta, to pick up her wages of $1.20. There wasn't inflation back then. The money was still sound, and 5 cents was something you would stoop over to pick up. So Saturday morning, the scene is 102 years ago, Saturday morning, little Mary Fagan, a young 13, I think she was 13 years old, she's getting her paycheck from working at the National Pencil Factory. She has to go in on a Saturday because the Jew wouldn't give it to her friend on that Friday because he wanted to lech on her. He wanted to, what we would call today, sexually harass or molest her. In fact, he wanted to do more than that. So he had her come in basically alone when no one else is going to be there. So she takes the streetcar that morning and Saturday to go to downtown Atlanta to the National Pencil Company to pick up her wage check or her wages of $1.20. She had made plans to stay and watch the parade. Governor Joseph M. Brown and other dignitaries were to share the reviewing stand. It was a legal holiday that the South still celebrated then. There were still some surviving Confederate veterans. 1865 to 1913, they would have been pretty old, but still some alive. That day would change the lives of everyone it touched. Tom Watson would reflect the mood of us Georgians in his magazine. That's the one I did on the earlier broadcast. And newspaper. So Tom Watson would reflect the mood of us Georgians in his magazine and newspaper. He would be elected to the United States Senate and his statue placed in front of the Georgia State Capitol building. That's the one they recently took down, I believe. Solicitor Hugh M. Dorsey would ride right into the governorship of Georgia, all based on this case. As my father leaned back, the sunlight turned his hazel eyes to green. Your grandmother, Fanny Fagan Coleman, remembered that day the rest of her life, he said. Little Mary was dressed in a lavender dress that her Aunt Lizzie had made for her. She carried a parasol and a German silver mesh bag. She had ribbons in her hair that tied her long reddish hair up. She was a beautiful young child, my father paused, like you. Little Mary entered the pencil factory about noon that day, he continued. What happened then, no one will ever really know. Newt Lee, as it sounds, the night watchman, found her body in the basement next to the coal bin that Sunday morning at about 3 a.m. She had been brutally raped and murdered. Newt Lee was a Negro, and remember, in 1906, Atlanta had one of the country's worst race riots. So right then, he feared for his life. He would have been afraid to lie even if he had wanted to. He ran up to the telephone and called the police. Two notes were found by her body, but Mary did not write those notes, according to Grandmother Fanny. So back then, blacks were scared of whites, and they knew if they were raping and murdering white women, they knew that there'd be hell to pay. Unlike today, when I read this one, virtually nothing happens to them, even if they get caught. And nothing happens to them from the white community. It's all, we've deputed our manliness to the cops, who aren't very good at catching criminals. So blacks, being essentially animals, feel that it's open season and they will take what they can get. And they don't have much to worry about from either the white race, which has been essentially deracinated and demoralized by the Jews of the Leo Frank type, so that it's easier for them and their Negro helpers to prey on us. Anyway, we don't want to get too far abroad. I go into that stuff a lot more if you listen to the Tom Watson. And I did a second one. This is probably the third long one we've done. This is the first book, what we've done, a couple of very long articles, the Tom Watson article and a long article by a recent researcher who has access to a lot of files that are not easy to find. Anyway, so she goes in there, she's raped and murdered, her body is found at about 3 a.m. that evening, or that early Sunday morning, by a black named Newt Lee. And Atlanta had a race riot in 1906, so this is like 7 years later. So what her father is saying to this Mary Fagan, the grandniece of her, Newt Lee would have been afraid to lie even if he'd wanted to. He ran up to the telephone and called the police. Two notes were found by her body, but Mary did not write those notes, according to Grandmother Fanny. Grandmother Fanny had been expecting Mary back home that evening after the parade, so she goes to pick up her check and then go see the Confederate Memorial Parade. Sundown came and still no little Mary. My step-grandfather went downtown to try to locate anyone that could give him information on little Mary's whereabouts. No luck. It would be the next day, the 27th of April, before they were told that little Mary had been found dead. The family was terrified, shocked. She was so young, and she'd been violated. Little Mary's body was taken to Bloomfield's, a local undertaker, which was also used as Atlanta's morgue. The funeral was held that Tuesday, April 29th, 1913. Her casket was surrounded by flowers. The flowers were expressions of the whole state's sympathy to the family. She was laid to rest that day in Marietta City Cemetery. Leo Frank, the supervisor of the factory, was charged with a murder. His trial started on the 28th day of July that year. So she's murdered at the end of April, May, June, July. Within 3 months, his trial's going on. They had much speedier trials back then. The case became famous because it was reportedly the first time in the history of Georgia and the South that a black man's testimony helped to convict a white man, but not a white man, a Jew. And if you don't realize that Jews are not white, except when it serves their purposes, there's a lot you need to learn about Jews and listen to other stuff from the Learning College that we're doing. Looking closely at me, my father realized that I did not understand all he was telling me, and so he simplified the story as much as he could. As soon as we got up from the table, I went upstairs to my room and examined what I saw in my mirror. Pretty? Was I? Satisfied with my father's explanation, I relaxed a bit. It was just a coincidence that Mr. Henry, my science teacher, had known the story of little Mary Fagan, I told myself. I was positive that I would never be asked that question again. That was in 1968. My father decided to retire from the United States Air Force after serving some 22 years in that same year. Then he went to work for the United States Post Office as a letter carrier in Charleston. During my summer vacation that year, I went to Chicago to visit relatives with my grandmother, Frances Petullo Mastandrea, P-E-T-U-L-L-O-M-A-S-T-A-N-D-R-E-A, who had lived with us for 5 years. A few weeks after our arrival in Chicago, my parents called to say the family was moving to Atlanta. Our family is in Atlanta, my father said, and my parents are getting older. I want us to know them as we do Grandma Frances. He was right. We never really knew any of our family, and I was ready to settle down and live somewhere for more than a couple of years. I was excited as we arrived at our new home in DeKalb County, on the outskirts of metropolitan Atlanta and close enough to my grandparents in Atlanta. It was a nice suburb in which to raise a family, and the high school, Shamrock, was the best the area had to offer. When school began, I soon learned that making friends might be difficult. Most of the cliques had gone to school together since kindergarten. That was hard for me to imagine. I had never had a friend more than a few years. To have a lifetime friend seemed impossible. And you who have moved a lot in your youth, as I did, will understand what she's talking about there. The first day, the teachers called out our... It's kind of like virginity. Once you move once, you might as well move 1,000 times. You can't get in with the same people you started with, really. Even if you're good at making friends, I suppose. There are certain memories you just simply won't have. The first day, the teachers called out our names, glancing at each student in order to associate names and faces. To my amazement, most of my teachers asked me that question. Are you by any chance related to little Mary Fagan who was murdered here in Atlanta? Are you her namesake? I was horrified. What was the truth about my great aunt? Who knew the whole story? I decided to ask my grandfather, William Joshua Fagan Jr., about his little sister. Of all the people in our family, he'd be the one to know about the pretty girl for whom I'd been named. But my grandfather was beginning to show his age then. His light blue eyes reflected the continual tiredness he felt. His balding head glittered in the sunlight. He'd had a stroke earlier and his communication skills were hampered. So I decided to wait until the right moment to ask him my questions. One day, to everyone's surprise, my grandfather came out with little Mary's picture and pointed to me. As he looked at the picture and then me, he sobbed, and as he tried to find the words, nothing came out but low sobs and wailings. I knew then I could never ask him any questions about little Mary. I decided to ask my father if he could tell me why he named me after little Mary, and he was ready for the question. I had determined, quote, almost from the day your mother and I were married, that we would name our first girl child after your great aunt, little Mary Fagan. This was my tribute to my father. Little did I realize the impact this would have on you. And yes, I wonder if I knew then what I know today, if I would have named you after little Mary. Your great aunt had been born on June 1st and you on June 5th. As soon as you were big enough, I would take you with me on Saturday morning when my friends and I went out for coffee. You were my constant companion when I was not out flying, and I took a great deal of pleasure in teaching you the things that all young children have to learn. A wife, a child, flying, what more could a man want? Some of my friends would from time to time make comments about your size. You have always been petite, and it seemed to me you were taking after your great aunt, little Mary. She never was to be over 4 feet 11 inches. In sheer desperation, I would ask, well, what do you expect out of Shetland ponies? Stallions? This method worked with the adults. When you were about 4 years old, you bore a striking resemblance to your great aunt, little Mary. But at that early age, it made no difference or impression on you. When I was 4 and a half in January 1959, my father had asked for reassignment and was assigned to the 1608 Military Air Transport Wing in Charleston, South Carolina. When we arrived in Charleston, he was assigned to the 17th Air Transport Squadron. He continued, "The interest your name caused when we signed you up for kindergarten was unreal. People would come up to us and sing the Ballad of Mary Fagan. They would tell me stories that I had never heard before. Then the questions would come. What relationship we were, and had our daughter been named for Little Mary, they would exclaim about what a pretty little girl you were, and that you looked just like Little Mary." In January 1960, my father was presented with an individual flying safety award and was assigned to the 1503rd Air Transport Wing in Tachikawa Air Base, Japan. Tachikawa. By then, I had a sister and 2 brothers. Tachikawa was our home for the next 3 years, he told me. These years, we were flying mostly into Korea and the Philippines. During this time, few questions were asked about little Mary. I extended my tour for another year in order to go to Hawaii. During those years out of the country, little Mary had gently slipped to the rear of my mind. In December 1964, I was promoted to Master Sergeant. Now it was time to return to the continental United States, which we did in July 1965. Your life then took a turn that I had not foreseen. The day you came home from school crying and asking me about little Mary was a day I would never forget. I had mixed emotions. I wanted you to know your legacy, but on the other hand, I became frightened for you. I had hoped that you would never encounter discourteous people, and I feared that your legacy would submit you to this. Daddy continued, "You carry a proud name, one that is instantly recognized not only here in Georgia, but across this great country of ours. Hold your head high, stand proud, face the world, let them know that you are Mary Fagan, the great niece of little Mary Fagan." It was then that I learned that a vow of silence had been kept by our family for close to 70 years. It had been imposed on us by Fanny Fagan Coleman, Mary Fagan's mother, at the time of little Mary's death. The murder, the trial of Leo Frank, and his lynching has deeply affected the lives of all involved. All the principals in the trial are dead now, and the obituary of each of them mentioned their connection to the murder of little Mary Fagan. My family had hoped that the lynching of Leo Frank would be the final ending of the horrible tragedy, that they could finally continue their lives, that the pain would ease. It hasn't. The legacy left to me is a difficult one, but I have had to accept it. Until recently, I discussed little Mary Fagan only if I was asked, "Are you by any chance related to little Mary Fagan?" But to my surprise, I've been asked that question all my life, both inside and outside of Georgia. And that would be the end of chapter one. And we'll pick up soon again with chapter two as we just get going. Thanks for being with me today. This is Alex Linder. Everything that I do as part of the Learning College Vanguard audiobooks can be found at vnnforum.com. I'll be back with you again real soon.